the Station of the Stars. RTI.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Rob Brad. He was still ranting on in the commercial break, boys and girls, for goodness sake.
Oh, no, he just let me go. And then halfway through, he says, you might as well shut up now because I've stopped recording ages ago.
Oh dear, oh dear. Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Poprad with me, Eric Wiltshire, at the base of the Tatry Mountains over here in Poprad in East Slovakia, and Lee Banks over in the UK. He claims to be freezing. He doesn't know what he's...
You got it, bad man. Yeah. I've had the light... What, if, ladies and gentlemen, if you felt I went away for a few seconds in the last half, you're quite right, I did, because I was so cold I had to go and light the fire.
Yeah, well, I thought you were going to say light a candle.
That goes back to the story we've just done. That I was
stop it. Yeah. Anyway, Barclays have announced the new results for the year. Profits are down 3% to a mere £5.9 billion.
Isn't it? This is very interesting. It's got wider ramifications than just that headline, hasn't
it? Well, a lot more, because they've said the slowdown is at its investment bank arm. But funnily enough, now, let's put this into perspective. Number one, they are based in the UK, but they were not bailed out by the British government, as were other groups like Lloyds and TSB.
And this is why I'd say it's interesting. Not everybody might like Barclays. But,
well, we don't, but that's beside the point. We're going to be good journalists. The fact is that the bank itself has capped. They put a cap on the bonuses that are going to be paid out, which is still a lot of money. Are we talking to sort of £80,000-ish?
No, 65.
65, do beg his pardon. I'm thinking euros, sorry. And... you know, they have put a cap on it. But more importantly, in their financial results for the year, they are one of the first banks to come out, so we don't know about the rest yet. But they have hit the suggested targets by the UK government of lending to small businesses.
Yeah.
So what we've got is a bank not in... I mean, there's no reason for them to do anything because they're not the beck and call. They're not owned in shares by the UK government like the rest are. But they've actually fulfilled the request of the UK government, lent to small businesses, capped the bonuses that can be done. And yet they've... All right, the banking figures are down, which is okay, but they've still managed to make an enormous profit by meeting the requirements of the government. So if they can do it, what about the rest?
Well, it's just that the way it is, isn't it? At least, you know, Barclays have gone out on a... Oh, well, have been left out on a limb, in reality. They didn't need it. They've been left out there, and they've done something right. And that's a good thing. And there should be a lead. There should be a lead taken from this by the other bank. If you think that the bonuses... if you think this is amazing, the average bonus for a Barclays employee has fallen by 21%. But they're still getting 15 grand apiece.
Well, there is that to it. But within, within the figures, Lee, the project was called the Merlin Project, or the Merlin Programme, or Project Merlin or something, where the government couldn't force people into it. They'd rather negotiate it, which I think is quite a good thing. Because what you've got to be careful of here is... for people not to fall into the trap of hating every bank, because banking, you know, the hidden side of
the
income...
I've got to say, I don't think it's bad to hate every bank.
Well, the hidden side of banking is that it's a huge revenue earner and job creator in the UK. So if all the banks say to you, well, I don't like your banking system and your regulations, I'll shoot off somewhere else, which in today's world they can, because they can communicate, you know, around the world very, very easily. You know, this is a good, really, really good thing, because they've obviously not got that pressure on them, so they're happy where they are, which is good for jobs and good for even the bonuses, because that's taxed. So that's good for the Chancellor.
Right.
And they've lent £17.4 billion to small and medium-sized firms in the last year, which is phenomenal. And I really am waiting to see if the state-owned as they are, banks, when they bring their annual reports out, if they've actually hit the same targets of a bank, that doesn't really have to do it.
Well, that's right, but there is something to say about that, which I know we're going to talk about later, but might as well do it now, which is the quantitative easing that the Bank of England's just pumped £50 billion into the economy again.
Yep.
Now, the quantitative easing is in principle a really good thing, because that should send money down onto the streets where people can borrow it, where small business people can borrow it, where people who are trying to buy a house can borrow it, and it should help the economy. But what actually happens when think what quantitative easing is, everybody. Quantitative easing
is... No, it's called printing money.
Exactly. It's just non-existent money. It doesn't exist. It's never existed, and it never really will exist. It just is there. Yeah, let's throw loads of paper into the economy. Loads of bits of paper into the economy. And then we'll all pretend that it's worth something, and we'll all do something with it. And what they've actually done is not give the pretend money to the little people who need to set up pretend businesses and buy pretend houses. What they've actually done is buy government bonds and debt.
Well, no, but Barclays haven't done that.
Barclays haven't. I'm saying this is what the Bank of England have done.
Well, possible. And that currently, just out of interest, they've actually pumped into the economy £325 billion.
Of non-existent money.
Which is a lot of non-existent money, whichever way you look at it. I'm not convinced that's working. I think there's a...
Well, it ain't working for reasons I've just said, that nobody's actually getting it. They're playing with it. It's like they've got a big monopoly set, and all the bankers are sitting there playing with it, not doing what Barclays have done, like you say, which I would say we don't like Barclays, but at least they've gone out and got off the BTMs. Is an old-fashioned English right?
Yeah.
And they've got off the BTMs, and they've done something, and they've won.
Yeah, so if they can do it, everybody else can. Emergency services in Cumbria have dealt with 79 crashes in less than 6 hours because of freezing rain, which I suppose has been exacerbated by snow today as well, and the conditions over in the UK. And I remember reading an online newspaper where there was notes about... there was a big advert in there from one of the tyre places that you can go to in the UK, suggesting people, because of the cold snap, should swap to winter tyres, or at least...
Just one where you can't get thicker than a... Yeah, right.
I didn't say that. And or universal tyres, which work equally well in the sort of tepid summers of the UK as well as the winters. And yet nobody's flipping done it. And then they're wondering why their cars don't work so well in the winter. And
mine doesn't work at all now since that fact.
I knew that was coming. And all I've got to say, guys, is that I drive in a country which doesn't stipulate, but automatically does, swap between winter and summer tyres.
You should do, but you've got to remember, Britain's... Well, I was going to say Britain's never had this problem before, but when you think
it's
a long time, and we've never done it, because we're too tight to buy two sets of tyres, and most of us wouldn't be able to change them anyway.
Well,
because I couldn't change the tyres on Michael Mondeo because I'd lost the locking wheel nuts. If I'd ever had a puncture, which will never happen to me again now, that will never happen to me with Michael, but I would not have been able to change the tyre because I couldn't get the locking wheel nuts off.
Oh, there's ways of doing that. I'll ask the man from the AA, he can do it.
It hardly matters anymore, does it?
No, it's academic really, isn't it?
You know, it's what the headline that I put on that story, which I thought was quite a good headline.
Go on.
Crash bank wallop, what a snowstorm, oh, what a chilly laugh, right? Actually, it's more poignant under these circumstances. Crash bank wallop.
I could visualise you walking around in black for the next 2 days as well.
Well, we'll be walking around, won't we?
Yes, that's true. Another one, we mentioned the treaty.
That's my job to do that.
Okay, then. I'm cold. The tweeters of last week we mentioned, when the guy who tried to get into America, who I found out this week was actually on British telly this week as well.
What are you talking about now?
The guy that tried to get in the US last week after suggesting he was going to go there and bomb it.
Yeah, bomb it.
On his tweets. Actually appeared on television this week. And the story continues because...
I'm bored with this now. Yeah.
Excuse me, this is about a journalist. Stop moaning.
No. Carry on, man.
Yes. A Saudi journalist has been accused of insulting the Prophet Muhammad.
Oh, not again, for God's sake.
In a tweet.
Stop it.
And what he said in his tweet was, I have loved things about you, I have hated things about you, and there is a lot I don't understand about you. I will not pray for you. And that's what he told one of the big news agencies. But we can't check that out because he's... We can't check that because his Twitter account has been deleted for some bizarre reason. Whether he did it or not, we won't know. But
quite seriously, though, who's right and who's wrong? If Britain's saying, oh, you can't pray at a council meeting, and they're killing off his... Saudis are killing off his tweet account because he says, I will not
pray. No, he was arrested in Malaysia, Lee.
Oh, Malaysia, wherever he was. I don't care about facts. I'm a journalist, right? So, what I'm saying is, if he says, I am not going to pray to you because you've hurt me, as my God, you have hurt me, you've offended me or whatever, what right, why has he got a lesser right to do that than this council has to ban prayers? We think what happens in Saudi or Malaysia or wherever it is ludicrous and arcane and wrong. The same thing, in principle, has just happened at Biddeford Council.
Right, but the thing is, he's broken a law that in a certain region, the request was made
in Biddeford. They broke a law in a certain region.
Well, there is that too as well. But the other interesting thing is, he was arrested because of a request from Interpol.
Now, it's ludicrous. What is wrong with having a belief and a religion and expressing your own thoughts about your beliefs and your religion? This world is going insane.
I'm sure it will rumble on. The Queen's celebrations, Lee.
Unlike my car. Queen's celebrations, yes. Yes.
Stop it.
No, I think, I've taken like a different point of view on the Queen's celebrations, really. Mm. Because, you know, we all know about it, and it's quite an amazing feat for the Queen to have written. And we met the Queen, didn't we?
We did meet the Queen.
And we bowed to the Queen, we lowered our heads.
We did.
Queen, and we watched her and we talked to her.
And she smiled.
She said, what are those two doing? Have we got bad backs?
Yes.
I spoke to Prince Philip. I don't think you spoke to Prince
Philip. No, you were the one that was honoured.
I was the one who spoke to him. Yeah.
You're the one that's going to be Sir Lee next.
I'm a bit surly about this issue. You can tell that I'm fudging this because I put this story in and I've not read it. No, it's the work of the photographer, theatrical designer, narcissist, careerist, and exceptionally talented Cecil Beaton.
Who's that then?
Is what?
Who's that then?
Cecil Beaton. He lived from 1904 to 1980. He is one of our most.
Did he have a top 10 hit?
No, he didn't. He was a photographer, theatrical.
What was his Facebook page?
It was Mrs. Beaton. He cooked up some very special things on that Facebook page, I must say. And 18,000 of his vintage prints and negatives.
Yes.
Are at the Victoria and Albert Museum in a special diamond jubilee. See, I found the bit in the story I was looking for now. Built a diamond jubilee celebration.
Are they putting it on the website?
They will put it on their website, yeah, and he'll have a little bit on his Facebook account. I saw it, they were, I'm not doing that.
No, perhaps not.
Just a good thing. You know, we all know about the celebration, but I think it is good that Cecil Beaton, who dedicated his life, he was a strange man, but he dedicated his life to perpetuating images and thoughts and things about Britain. And he did this fabulously dazzling display of photographs and things about the Queen and the royal family. And finally, it's being gathered together properly and cogently to celebrate the Queen's Diamond Jubilee.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, good stuff. I'm sure he'll get it on his Facebook page one day. This just annoys me a bit. You do the headline, I'll do the story.
Well, my headline says, thanks a million, say benefit claimants who own a mansion. And they do, ladies and gentlemen.
This is all about the latest Euro lottery winners. Michael and Jean O'Shea have built themselves a luxury mansion in County Kerry.
£700,000. luxury mansion in County Kerry, ladies and gentlemen. But, just bear that in mind.
But they still apparently are living in a Nottingham council house. So they carry on claiming £6,000 in disability benefit and motoring. It's a thing called Motability. So they get
that means they get a free car.
Well, they get a cheap car, not necessarily free.
Not that cheap.
It is cheap.
No, it's not.
It is.
Well, it ain't that cheap. There's a young lady I know in not far from here who claims disability and claims motability.
It's hard, isn't it? It's cold.
It is. And, oh, I'll tell you, man, I am so cold, I can't believe it.
Another
but she has a people carrier, which must have cost $23,000. That's not a cheap car.
No, it's not. But I have to say, on the other side of the fence, Lee, they might well be living in a Nottingham council house, but that won't continue. But if they have disability benefits, if they are incapacitated genuinely, like someone who's genuinely paraplegic, why should they not get the disablement benefits?
Well, in principle, I would say that feasibly you are correct. Mm-hmm. But the reason they are getting these benefits is because they are not benefits which are means tested. Right? So if you are rich, if you are well off, and you have more than £16,000 in the bank. £16,000 in the bank in the UK, you cannot claim.
But they are. But don't forget, they are reviewing all of those laws are about to change. The way in which the means test system is going to operate is changing. And in actual fact, there was a lot of complaining a few weeks ago from disabled groups. Because every couple of years, no matter what your disability, you're still going to have to go and get a medical checkup to prove that you are still disabled.
Yeah, but that's always been the same. That's always happened.
No, it hasn't. No, this is a new one where they're actually going to do it rather than talk about it.
Well, so, no, they do. You've always had to go in for checks. It wasn't every 2 years, and it wasn't as tightly controlled as it is going to be or is now. Mm. But you had to go in for a check to find out if you were capable of working. You had to answer. Yep. It was 21 questions, and how many you got right out of that dictated whether you stayed on benefits.
Yep.
I suppose rather than attacking the benefits system on this, you should be looking at Michael and Gene O'Shea. €10 million.
Well, that's maybe so. But I'll tell you what, I'll paint the other side of the picture. My father worked for most of his life. Right the way up till he was 70, nearly. He received commendations from the Royal Mail because of daylight robberies where people attacked him to try and break in.
That's right.
Et cetera, et cetera. Now, when he actually retired, he hadn't stopped working. So he got to retirement age, hadn't stopped working, and through came the travel card for his low-cost rail, a bus pass if he wanted, which he had. He was entitled to a pension, et cetera, because he'd worked all of his life and those were the benefits issued to him at the time. And he actually was so sort of concerned about the public side of things. He actually said to me one day, I don't know whether I should take these, Eric. I said, yeah, Dad, how much money have you paid in?
Which, yeah, of course,
he can't answer me because he doesn't know. No one would expect him to. I said, just think of what you've paid in. If that's something that goes out to everybody, some of which have never paid a penny in, you have yours back as well. You're entitled to it.
Absolutely. Of course he is, yeah.
And I maintain that. So I still think there's an issue that under UK rules, I could have had a disabled pass for my car because of my asthma. Mm. And I'd be perfectly... I can't get one in Slovakia because they don't do the same rules. They've got a different approach to it. You can still...
And the air's clear.
Well, there is that as well. But the fact is, I didn't want that particular thing because I just thought, nah, I'm going to be a wimp. Why should I worry about that? I'll get on with life. But there are certain times with normally... I'm saying normally disabled people, which is a contradiction in terms, I know. But, you know, if someone is paraplegic, if they put the crosses on the right box to a lottery ticket and it comes up for them and they get 10 million. Let's not all be English and boring about it and whinge. Why don't we say, well, good luck to you, Michael and Gene. Spot on, guys. If you want to carry on claiming, that's entirely up to you. If you don't, we will very much warm the fact that you don't claim. But if you've been in that situation, that the opportunity is for you to do it. Moving along, because we've still got loads
of... No, I have to say something very quickly on that. You can't just move on that.
Go on.
Very simply, in principle, I understand what you're saying, and you're right, everybody pays in, so they should be able to get it back. But if you cannot get housing benefit because you've got £16,000 in the bank, and yet you get a free car, despite the fact you've got £10 million, there's something not right.
The system isn't right, agreed. India tells the UK to stuff its aid.
Good on you, India. I love India.
Go on.
It's just crazy, isn't it? India basically, we offered India, I can't remember what it was now, £2.7 billion worth of aid, I think that's how much it was, to help the little poor children on the streets, which is a very laudable thing to do.
Right.
And India said, it could get stuffed. You can have that back. We don't need it, which is a good thing for the Indians to say.
Yes.
And you know what? What really is the rub in this story is that Britain then carried on saying, no, please take it. And Britain is actually begging India to take the aid that we are offering. We've not said, here it is, here's a chance, have a go at this, and things like that. We'll give it us back. Well, thank you very much. If you don't need it, that's fine. We're begging. You know why we're begging?
Because we want to flog on some warplanes.
Yeah, exactly. The British-built Typhoon, right?
Yeah.
It's a kind of 6.3 billion war thing that the Indians are going ahead and doing. They are a burgeoning nation. We are battering down the door to try and get into India, to try and jump on the backs of their economic survival and their economic growth. And basically, they don't want us. There is something that I bought out in India called Himalaya hair cream. Right? Himalaya hair cream. Best hair cream I've ever used in my life. Conditioner brilliant. Do you know what? They don't want to sell it over here. I can't buy it. I can't even buy it on the internet. They don't need us. We need them. And we're trying to... India is known for taking bribes. India is a country where it's supposed to be all corruption. And what are we trying to do to get in this Typhoon thing? We are bribing India by saying, here, help the little children on the street with our 2.7 billion.
How long has this been going? It's been going on for years between governments. Aid goes in one direction, they buy something back. It's been going on for years. And I'm sure it will carry on, Lee.
Absolutely, I'm sure it will. But the funny rub on this, and we actually, again, talking about our show, this show that what we are doing now, right? What, 3 months ago while I was out in India, we revealed that Britain was giving, I think it was £13 billion worth of aid to India at that time.
Yep.
And India was giving £36 billion worth of aid to Africa.
Marvellous. Marvellous. Good system. We're going to move on to a new law which will make stalking an offence in England and Wales. And let me quantify that by saying that, as you've heard the stories about the problems both Lee and I have had over stalkers, in my time of having the problem, it was a gentleman from Scotland, and there were no stalking laws in Scotland, but Scotland got their act together, no pun intended, and moved on to make stalking an offence in its own right in Scotland. Unfortunately, the rest of Britain didn't bother to do the same thing. So it took a gentleman or a group of people led by a Plaid Cymru MP from Wales, Mr. Efflyn Lwyd, and he called for the changes to the risk assessments and treatment and sentencing of stalkers after a government's ongoing review of harassment laws. Because stalking is not just harassment, it is stalking, end of. End of the debate. And there's people actually sort of talking about killing girlfriends, and what starts off with a small thing becomes a big thing. Unfortunately, they just said mostly targeting women in the inquiry that took place. Well,
which is not, well,
we don't agree with that, do we, Lee?
Not at all. My stalking situation is still continuing. I make no bones about it. I'm not going to try and identify this one. Well, I'll tell you a little story about it, which is perfectly true and very scary indeed. My stalker has stalked me now for 5 years. I've actually don't go into the town as often as I did where she lives, which is the next town to where I live, because the police have said you've got to keep out of her way. And the police actually said this to me.
You have to keep out of her way.
No, I don't officially have to keep out of her way. I've not got a restraining order against me. She's had up to now 4 restraining orders against her. But for safety's sake, I don't go to that town.
Oh, right, okay. So it might be
better.
It's advice.
Advice, yeah. It's not that I'm in trouble. They're just saying, and this is the reason I was saying it, because the police said, you have to be careful because these situations can very often end up in murder. So what the police were actually saying to me is, for your own safety's sake and for Andrea's safety's sake, stay out of this area where you know where she is, because ultimately it could end up in death.
Ooh.
And that's the truth. Now, what I did, ladies and gentlemen, and Eric, is about a month ago, when the last incident did happen, and this town is my closest town for going shopping, where I go miles further now, although I don't now because of a particular situation. I go to a different town to do my shopping because then I won't run into this woman. But I did run into this woman about a month or 6 weeks ago, and she started photographing me, she started walking in circles around me. There is no doubt that she's mentally ill, and that to me is no excuse for stalking. She's mentally ill. The police have told me that she is ill. So what I did, because by that time I'd found out where she lived, I went round to her house while she was in the town, and knowing that her husband was there, and I know that her husband knows that what this woman is doing, and I knocked on his door and I told him straight what she was doing again. And you know what the most appalling thing was?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't care. He had no caring at all about the situation.
Knew that this was going on, but just didn't care
because
about
police,
it.
Yeah, she's been arrested five times for it.
Well, let's just hope the stalking law goes through, because typically, with UK law, there's the follow-on, which is aiding and abetting. So if that's the case, that's he can be arrested for aiding and abetting stalking. So you never know. You might get him twice, Lee.
I think that's a good point. And I'd never thought of that until you did it. Yeah, he is actually aiding. No, he is aiding and abetting her because he knows what she does. And the problem is, he is frightened of her. The police have actually said...
Well,
can I
just say to everybody listening as a plea, if you consider you have a stalker, please go to the police, insist on crime numbers, make them do something. And if it is worse still that you know of somebody that is stalking another human being, please tell the police, because we need to get those people some help, because
some help, and we need to help the victims of the stalkers by letting the police know. Unfortunately, as things stand at the moment, the police hands are tied.
Yep.
My problem, the reason she's been arrested 5 times and nothing has actually happened.
10 seconds.
Is because it's only happens every so often because I don't go to the town so much. So
there you go. That was Postcard from Pop Brad for another week, boys and girls. We'll be back next week with a trio of us as opposed to a duo of us. See you soon. Bye-bye.
RTI.